This is Brian Matthew from the BBC in London, presenting the ex-Beatles story. The fairy story we set out to tell is almost told. In these last two chapters, we'll be looking at the separate careers of the individuals who were collectively the Beatles. First, John and Paul. John Lennon now seems set on living permanently in the States, and after a period in New York, he now resides in L.A. But the start of 1972 saw his solo album Imagine at the top of the list of best-selling albums, both here and in America. Crippled Inside from Lennon's album, Imagine. At the time of recording the Imagine album, John and Yoko were appealing against the United States Immigration Department's decision not to allow John to reside permanently in the States. Naturally enough, with such problems, John didn't have much time for activity on the recording front. However, on March the 20th, 1972, John and Yoko's wedding anniversary, they completed a two-record set, Sometime in New York City, and Live Jam. A Live Jam included not only the Plastic Ono Band, but also Frank Zappa, the Mothers of Invention, and a cast of thousands. The recordings were gathered from two sources, concerts at which John and Yoko had appeared at the Lyceum Theatre, London, in December 1969, and Fillmore East in 1971.
This is a song that I used to sing when I was in the cabin in Liverpool. I haven't done it since, so...
Completely unrehearsed live performance of Well, John Lennon and the Plastic Ono Band, and included on that recording, made on June the 5th, 1971, were Frank Zappa, the Mothers, Ainsley Dunbar and Klaus Voormann, and helping John with the production, Phil Spector. At Christmas 1972, British fans of Lennon were able to hear a smash hit single which had been released in the United States a year earlier, in December 1971. A giant in both countries, it had a typical John Lennon-Yoko Ono message. Happy Christmas, war is over.
So this is Christmas, and what have you done? Another year over, and you won't just be gone. And so this is Christmas.
John and Yoko with the voices of the Harlem Community Choir. As we said earlier, the Lennons were very quiet on all fronts in 1973, though Yoko issued a double album, Approximately Infinite Universe, and Johnny Moran talked to her about it.
We played the album on Seen and Heard last week. I said then that I thought it was the most commercial thing that you'd ever done. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I suppose that's what it is. Well, what it did is I wasn't really trying to make it that commercial. I mean, in a way, I was aware of that because I really wanted to communicate with a larger, wider audience. At the same time, I'm sort of grooving in this kind of music form now, you know. I think it's quite interesting to write this way. Because pop and rock, you know, well, I was writing songs before, but rock is sort of like a new field for me, so I'm just really grooving, you know.
Will you and John be coming back to Britain in the foreseeable future, or does that cause problems in the United States?
Yes, exactly. Well, it does cause some problems because now that I have, well, we have this immigration problem. And if we go out of this country, we can't come back. And so we're just sort of working on that, you know.
I know a girl who's in constant hell. No love or beauty could keep her cool, 'cause there's a thousand holes in her heart. Window of the past goes through her heart, reminding her of the people she killed. Window of now blows off the crew, telling her there's something she's missed. Says a mental rock I never sing. Two bottles of loneliness patching the holes in a dream.
From the jointly produced album by John and Yoko. They also produced a film, Imagine, and to bring Lennon's recording activities up to date, 1973 saw his album Mind Games.
Playing on the ground.
the title track from John Lennon's 73 album Mind Games. Alan Klein announced in April that ABCO would not continue to manage Apple, its subsidiaries, or the affairs of Lennon, Harrison and Starr, and so the whole business empire is now thrown back into the melting pot again, which is just about where it was in 1969 before Klein arrived. Apple Corps, the Beatles' own company, resumed control of their own affairs, and the way looks open for the disputes between Paul and the other three to be resolved. One thing is certain, that the bitterness is gone, and personal relationships are a lot more friendly now. To find out more about them and his reaction to Klein's departure, we talked to Paul McCartney about his more recent career with his group Wings. But first things first, Paul launched Wings Over Europe, in the course of which the band set off to appear at 26 concerts across that continent, travelling in an open-top double-decker bus. Michael Whale caught up with the band after their first appearance in the south of France and asked Paul why a bus instead of the usual luxury.
It mainly came about, we were on holiday, you know, we were trying to sort of get healthy before a tour. You know, like a lot of people do, because you think, oh, God, it's really going to take it out of you, you know, slog. But we suddenly thought, well, wait a minute, you know, if we're going to be in Europe in the summer, you know, going to places like, you know, south of France, you know, it's just silly to just be in some little box all day, gasping for air. So we came with this idea to have a upper deck, what's it called, open... What are they called?
Open deck, like they have in Brighton.
Yeah, open deck, you know, upper deck kind of thing. We've got some mattresses up there, you know, so we can just cruise along. Fantastic. Just great, just lie around, you know, and just get the sun, you see. Keep healthy, man, on tour. Can't be bad.
Well, then asked Paul why he decided to set up at the rather obscure amphitheatre in Toulon.
It's a very new band, you know. And if you go and play sort of Britain or America with a very new band, you're really on the spot, you know. You've got to be red hot. Mm-hmm. And it takes a little time for a band to get red hot. Yeah. You know, it's a question of, so it's almost like living together for a little while, bouncing off each other and stuff, you know. This is what we're learning to do on this tour, mm-hmm. at the expense, I suppose, of the Europeans.
Michael Whale then turned his microphone to Linda and asked her if she was nervous during the concert.
I was nervous first half, definitely.
Definitely.
We had no sound check, no rehearsal, no nothing. We had to go on cold, you know. So I had to warm up a bit. We were very hot second half.
Do you find it a great strain working, you know, with someone like Paul? I know he's your husband, but...
Easy. Really, I find it very easy. Totally, you know, I'm just still learning. But it's fun. It's like life, you know. It's just another thing in life.
When I met you at the station, you were standing with a bootleg in your hand. You back to my little place for a taste of a multi-color band. We're gonna get high. The night is young. Chewy, my pocket, little mama, gonna rock it every morning just because. We're gonna get.
Just part of Wings' Christmas release, Hi, 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 which also ran into censor problems.
The problem was that they don't use that kind of material, you know. And then people said, oh, he's done Married Little Lamb just to, so they'll have to play it kind of thing. Again, that wasn't the real reason. You know, I just do songs because they come into my head, you know. I just go and record them. And if the BBC will have them, well and good. If they won't, well, it does affect sales a bit, but that won't worry me too much.
And it didn't, because the BBC, and Radio 1 in particular, played the other side, Sea Moon, and as a double A-side, it got to number 5 in the hit parade in 6 weeks.
Was that the intro I should have been in? Thank you.
Simon, Simon, is she? Oh, Simon, Simon, Simon.
Not only were Wings busy recording, but Paul was writing the title music for the new James Bond movie, as well as preparing his own television spectacular for ATV. It certainly was spectacular, including a host of dancers dressed as half-boys, half-girls, complete with Paul in pink tails, scenes shot in a Liverpool pub with his relatives, as well as members of the general public singing some of Paul's Beatles standards. The critics, particularly Alan Coren of The Times, were pretty unkind to the show and really put the boot in.
This was not the sort of programme you make a comeback with. It was the sort of programme you make a comeback after.
And there was more in a similar vein from some of the other critics, eager, no doubt, to leap on the bandwagon and put down a reputation which perhaps they thought had been too easily acquired. Paul was asked by Nicky Horn how he reacted to criticism of Wings.
It doesn't really worry me when people criticise, but what I meant to say is, like most people, I tend to listen to it. You know, I know everyone thinks that when you get kind of famous or whatever, you think, well, you know, no. I mean, Sir Laurence Olivier doesn't listen to critics, does he? But, of course, you ever hear an interview with him, and he does. He's as scared as the rest of the people, you know. That's something I don't really think you grow out of. You either are the type of person who listens to criticism or you're not, you know. Mm. I happen to be a bit too listen-y for my own good, probably, you know.
And when I go away, I know my heart can stay with my love. It's understood. It's in the hands of my love.
I'll still find something there with my love. It's understood. It's everywhere with my love. My love does it good. Oh, oh, oh. Oh, 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 oh. My love does it good. Oh, oh, my love. Oh, oh, my love. Only my love holds the other key.
A song from James Paul McCartney's TV special, which also happened to be his current single, and a track of the group's next LP, Red Rose Speedway. If the critics needed reassurance, I would have thought that track proved that Paul had lost none of his talent for writing and performing songs, which must surely become standards in the years to come. As I said earlier, Paul was also involved with his producer of earlier days, George Martin, in recording the music for Live and Let Die. Nicky Horn asked him how that came about.
That came about because I always, you know, like to do kind of film things. So I always fancy myself as one of these writers who can kind of knock off a jingle, or can do a great ballad, or can do, you know, symphonic strings or whatever. You know, you name it, I'll have a go at it kind of thing. And the James Bond thing came along. Someone said, would you like to do it? Actually, a chap called Mr. Ronald Cass, all right, Ron, came along, and he said, would you like to do it? You know, so we said, fine, yeah, lovely. So we did. Have you heard it?
No.
Have you heard it? Really, oh, I yeah. think you'll like it. It's nice. It's what very. Sort of it's a change, you know, it's a change for Bond stuff. But, I mean, you mustn't think I'm trying to do a John Barry, you know. It's a one-off thing for me. They asked me to do it, and I'm kind of happy just to sit down. I read the book in the, in, you know, in a day kind of thing.
Didn't we all?
Yeah, Live and Let Die. Do you read that one? Yeah. Well, I don't think I'd actually ever read it till the film came, and I kind of read it. And there's a bit takes part in New York, and there's a lot of kind of black stuff in the film. You know, there's a load of black people in the film. You know, normally it's all kind of whites with Bond, but this particular book's a lot to do with blacks. So that was great for me because I thought I can get a lot of ubba dabba dubba, a lot of kind of congas and rhythm kind of thing in there. And I thought, well, I've got to get also the Bondy thing in. It's got to be very Bondy. So we kind of put big orchestra to get that bit in there. And I thought, we've got to have a bit of me, my kind of style, so we got that. And then the other thing is a lot of it happens in Jamaica. I think, actually, they might have changed it to New Orleans in the film. I'm not sure. But anyway, I bunged in reggae then, you know, which I like. Mm. I bunged in a kind of little bit of reggae. So it's a kind of mixture of the track, but it's a nice one. You know, people who've heard it, you know, one of my cousins who heard it kind of said it's one of those things where it gets a tingle up his back.
When you were young and your heart was an open book, you used to say, little let live.
You know you did, you know you did, you know you did.
But if this ever changes, makes you give in and cry. Say, live and let die.
And it's my bet that for all Paul's denial that he might be another John Barry, he will be asked to write more film themes as a result of that one. Finally, in this look at the career of Paul McCartney, we must go back to the business side. With Alan Klein out of their lives, does Paul think that his misgivings have been justified?
Yes, I do. I don't know, I don't feel kind of, smug about it, but
I don't think
it was the kind of thing that was needed. You know, I think there was something needed to kind of help with the financial. It wasn't so much a failure, it was a big financial mess, just no one knew where all the books were and all. It was a bit haphazard and stuff, you know. But I don't think he was the right man, and I'm glad to see him out, you know.
And although Paul precludes the possibility of the group The Beatles reforming, this doesn't mean that they won't record with each other occasionally.
Now he's gone out, the main obstacle to people working together has been removed, you know. I mean, it means now that, say, you know, if we fancy working with each other. So, but it doesn't mean necessarily the Beatles are going to reform, you know. It might mean that I'll play a concert with John in New York somewhere. George might roll in, Ringo might roll in, and you find that the Beatles are on stage, kind of thing. Mm. But at the moment, there's no great plans to get back together. You know, it's I know as much as you, really. But I say, you know, there's no kind of anger in there anymore, so that's a nice thing.
I mean, how's the animosity between John there's none and yourself?
Of that. Well, there's none of that. I mean, see, you've got to remember, you know, in our position, you know, what they do when you all you have to do is, all that has to happen is John to write a snidey song about me or to do a snidey article about me. And I'm expected to kind of jump down his throat. And whilst I was a bit cheesed off by it, obviously, I tried not to, and we eventually kind of cooled off. And after a couple of months, we were chatting away on the phone and kind of talking quite peacefully between each other and happily, you know. But I think just because we didn't say to the press, oh, by the way, everyone, we are now talking, you know, because you don't announce who you're talking to, and we still feel pretty human, so we don't go announcing. You know, if I phone John, I don't ring up the BBC, say, seen and heard? I'd like to do an interview, you know, and on the interview, yeah, I met John. You know, I mean, it's not like that. But there was only a couple of months of real bitterness in there, and that was due to a lot of things. We were being played against each other, and funny things like that. We've been made to think that each... I mean, I know the others at one time thought I was trying to take over Apple, which is nothing ever further from my mind, you know, because I'm not interested in big scene. But that was the kind of little thing they were hearing, you see. So, I mean, there was a bit of the bitterness. But now there's... it's great, you know. I say I just worked with Ringo. I've spoken to John and George pretty recently.
If I ever get out of here, thought of giving it all away to a registered charity. All I need is a fine today. If I ever get out of here, if we ever get out.
title track of a best-selling Wings album and also a number one single in many countries, Band on the Run, which incidentally was solely the work of the McCartney family, with Paul on drums and guitar as well as bass. Now, as a last question, we wondered just how Paul would like to be remembered in years to come.
I'm not interested in going down in history, because by the time I've gone, I won't be there to kind of read the books and stuff. I'm interested in going down now, you know. If we don't have a good concert, well, then for, you know, half an hour after it, it's a drag. But if you have a great concert, great. But that's really all it is. And I think if you check it out, you know, you find that pretty much any band, any musician, anywhere, just lives for that particular moment. It's a good concert. So I'm not fussy about going down in history. I think in a way I've probably gone down anyway, you know, without really trying to get down in history, you know. But I mean, what's history anyway? You know, it's only people like Oliver Cromwell ever, only the baddies ever go down in history, isn't it?
I'm sure there must be one or two goodies who might be remembered as well, Paul. In the next and last programme, we'll turn to the careers of the other two ex-Beatles, George Harrison and Ringo Starr, and hear assessments of the musical achievements of the Beatles by some of their contemporaries. John and Paul Today, the ex-Beatles story, was written and produced for the BBC by Johnny Beerling.